Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen. It's an early rise on Saturday. If you're in the West Coast, put the Denver omelet to the side, the country potatoes, the sourdough toast minus the butter. If you're on the East Coast, well, you've already had everything, and now you're just getting ready for lunch or a stroll with the wife. But it is the Doc Talk Podcast, hosted by a brother, a mentor, and a friend, Dr. Greg Roscoe in Pittsburgh. Here's truly Mark Mancini, producing in Los Angeles, 347-205-9631. 60 minutes goes quicker than Dan Rather doing it. So catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports Podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, more of him, less of me, let me lay the red carpet down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic. Doc the Threes, how are you? How can people get a hold of you? And you got two legends coming through on your great show again.
Well, thank you again, Mark, for your help putting it all together. I'm doing fine. You know, the show this week is not in Pittsburgh. We're down in Clearwater, Florida, and a tremendous place in the world. It's already about 75 degrees, clear, sunny, beautiful skies, beautiful water. And right in front of our studio here, there's a large event going on. People are out celebrating. People are out doing all kind of activities in downtown Clearwater. People can get a hold of me, GJRMD308 at Outlook.com. Today, you know, we're still on the concussion protocols for the NFL. You know, we've talked about it a couple of times. With the Super Bowl tomorrow, I thought it might be an appropriate topic. So let's talk about it. I've got a superstar who's been an L.A. Ram, and it's Artie Source. He was a Ram many years ago, however, has done tremendous things. And, you know, Artie, you put together what is Galaxy Sports and Entertainment? You're the president of that.
Well, you know, we formed the Galaxy Sports Network because you basically only have ESPN now. And ESPN has their way of expressing themselves. And what I try to do is I try to bring a geographical look, different areas of the country, what the writers are writing about, what the sportscasters are talking about, kind of meld it all into one thing. We've used Facebook. We've used a lot of different vehicles to deliver it. But to give the average sports fan a real wide-ranging look at what the great people who cover sports, whether it's, you know, the journalists, whether it's the sportscasters, give them an insight into how things are viewed from a different regional and geographical focus.
Perspective. Well, you know, Artie, also, you know, I'd like to let our listeners know you are on Sirius Radio. You're the co-host for Sports Overnight America, and that's a big deal. You've been doing that for about 6 years, so you're a well-known entity. Just background-wise, though, Artie, you have a degree in broadcast journalism, correct?
Yes, I graduated from the University of Southern California in 1980. I was like the guys nowadays. I took 5 or 6 years. It was a pretty good time to be there. I was in no hurry to get into the real world, believe me. But I played on the football team. I was a field goal kicker, one of the first kickers to ever get a scholarship to USC under John McKay. And then I finished my last 4 years under John Robinson. We went to 3 Rose Bowls. We're lucky enough to garner 2 national championships. Played with Anthony Munoz, an NFL Hall of Famer, Ronnie Lott, NFL Hall of Famer, Marcus Allen. And coincidentally, on the subject we're talking today, the Heisman Trophy winner from 1979 is having his celebration of life today in Southern California, Charles White. And he was one of the first people to be found to have, you know, CTE and some of the problems that plague ex-football players as we go down the line. And as you recall how Charles White played, you know, Greg, he played full speed. And you know, we were taught in our generation to lead with the helmet, to come up, you know, underneath the chin with the crown of the helmet and drive up and through. And, you know, many times over the years on kickoff returns, you know, they broke through the pack, and there I am staring one-on-one with the Otis Brown or whoever it might have been. And, you know, you're going to, you know, you got to you got to make the play, right? And
sure.
And that's not even talking about the day after day between the offensive linemen, you know, banging heads. And you'd look at their football helmets and they'd have gouges right above where the face mask is. And, you know, it's something that I've
tremendous.
Always really been involved in. And having played linebacker in high school at Newport Harbor High School, I was a pretty decent linebacker. I got to USC and I saw guys like Anthony Munoz, 6'8", 300 pounds. And I said, you know, I think it might be time for me to, like, get over and kick some field goal.
Beautiful. Hey, I have one more special guest here, if I can interrupt for a second. I have Dr. Andy Gibson. He's a specialist in neck and really brain chiropractic work. He does do a lot of traumatic injuries, and I've had Andy on the show before. He's a friend of our broadcast. And he really understands the pathophysiology. He understands what happens to these tissues in the brain, in the neck, how these athletes can suffer, as well as other people that are non-athletic and do suffer these kind of conditions. So, Andy, welcome to the program. And, you know, we have a bang-up lineup today with you and Art Source. So welcome, and thanks for being on the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, and yeah, we've had you before. We've had a lot of good interest in what you've talked about and, you know, helping to explain, you know, what's a concussion? What's a traumatic brain injury? You know, what are these about? What do these words mean? And, you know, another big word we're seeing today is chronic encephalopathy. You know, what's that all about? So we're going to use your expertise this morning and let our listeners know about these things. Can you help us?
Absolutely. I'd be honored to. I'll let you take the lead this morning.
Well, thank you. You know, we start, and, you know, the thing with regard to the concern today, and we've talked about concussion protocol, and, you know, Artie, you're more aware of it than a lot of us, but has that been a very dynamic situation, the change in protocol? How they've modified, how they've gone ahead from, you know, chief medical officers in the past, as you mentioned, one was a rheumatologist. Today we have Dr. Seals, S-I-L-L-S, who's a neurosurgical consultant. So the NFL has put a lot of attention on trying to keep their players healthy and to minimize concussions. Are you on board with that?
Yeah, I mean, and one of the great things that happened was back when Paul Tagliabue first was faced with this issue, I was working for a company called the Pro Football Hall of Fame Players Association. And what we did is we represented in sponsorship marketing at the time the 200 members of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And amongst those guys were gentlemen by the name of, you know, Junior Seau, who was not a teammate but a fellow Trojan. We had John Mackey, the great tight end for the Baltimore Colts. We had Pete Pijos from the Eagles. We had Chuck Bednarik. And a lot of these guys had really never understood why, you know, they had problems cognitively as they went through their lives. And to give you a background, in 1994, Paul Tagliabue, along with Greg Aiello, the NFL spokesman, they came up with a concept. And they called it the Mild Traumatic Brain Injury Committee. They wanted to find out what was going on because they started to see that these elderly guys were having Alzheimer's, they were having CTE, they were having dementia. And, you know, they wanted to see if there was any correlation or relationship between that and football. I mean, you remember the old football helmets, Greg, the concussion helmet that just had the band in it. I mean, that protected absolutely nothing. Then you got into the new helmets, the bike helmets, which were the water helmets and the air packet helmets. They were great. They did a better job of dispersing the blow. But what really happened there was the weight of the helmet, it became so cumbersome that it caused a little bit of neck problems, shoulder problems, which we could talk about with Andy. But, you know, as we go through the whole time, you got to remember now, Dr. Elliot Pellman was a rheumatologist.
Right.
And he was in charge of Mild Traumatic Brain Injury Committee that the NFL formed in 94.
Now, how did he get that job? Do you have any idea how he got that job?
Well, he was in New York. The NFL offices are in New York. And, I have a funny feeling that, they decided that since he was right there, he'd be good he could find out who to bring in to help, find out what was really going on. As you go down the line, guys, in 2009, the NFL, when Roger Goodell took over for Paul Tagliabue, the NFL actually instituted a whole different protocol. They knew what was coming. They had 4,500 players in the NFL who had signed up to sue the NFL because of the problems they faced due to CTE, dementia, Alzheimer's, whatever you want to call it. They eventually settled out of court for $765 million. Now, upon that settlement, the NFL came up with a statement saying the concussions are a part of the problem, an occupational risk, but we feel like we need to take care of the players that made the shield and made the NFL what it was. So we're going to go ahead and award these people this kind of money. Now, say it isn't your fault and then give the players $765 million kind of evades my brain. I'm not a lawyer by any means, but you're saying, we're part of this, but we don't want to be held any further down the line responsible.
Wow. I mean, a tremendous settlement. And, a lot of football players got on board. I think you're correct. About 4,500 joined in that lawsuit. And, Artie, as far as getting information, there's a lot of research that was done on players that had died where they were able to actually study their brains. And in doing that,
you've got Andre Waters, you've got Mike Webster, Mike Long, Mike Steeler, along with Mike Webster. Now, Mike Webster was an all-pro center. And, they've done studies on him, and they've done, movies on him. It's a sad situation. But you also had Dave Duerson, guys who committed suicide in the prime of their lives at 44, 43 years old. And when they went and did the test, Dr. McKee at Boston University, they found that of the 46 people that they've actually studied, ex-players, 45 of them had CTE and problems with their brain directly stemming from the contact between,
Let me bring Dr. Gibson in on this. Dr. Gibson, with regard to this cause and effect, having the traumatic brain injuries from trauma, what has gone on here? What are the dynamics? What's the cause and effect? Is the brain basically getting traumatized from repeated hits? What's the pathology here? What's the problem?
Well, good question. Let me back up a little bit and let's just briefly about the factors that lead up to the injury and why essentially they never stand a chance. The brain never, ever stands a chance in this football equation. Okay, so the upper neck, of course, we look at where the head meets the first bone, the atlas, and the second bone, the axis. And there's a bunch of ligaments up there that are collectively known as the cruciform ligament because they kind of form a cross shape. And if we look at their load limit, what's it take to injure those ligaments? It's roughly 395 newtons of force. If you convert that into pounds, it's about 88 pounds of force. Okay, so that's step one is understanding what we're working with. Right. The average defensive back, 6 foot, 200 pounds, let's say he's running a 4.5 40, that guy can generate 1,600 pounds of force when he tackles somebody. Okay?
Holy hell.
Wow.
Right, now here's where this gets more exciting. The acceleration force, right, that's what a G-force measures. The acceleration force when that guy hits somebody else is 30 to 60 G's of force, with routine hits exceeding 100 on an average game daily basis, okay?
Yep.
So those numbers. Now, here's where they don't stand a chance, okay? The average head weighs about 12, maybe 20 pounds if you've got a big head. If you take a 5-mile-an-hour vehicle crash with that same 200-pound man, the head accelerates at about 4 to 12 Gs. With a 5-mile-per-hour crash. So those ligaments are failing at 3 to 4 G's of force, and that football hit is 30 to 60 G's of force. See where I'm
My
going?
My God.
And that's repeated every day in practice, which is why they're using those new helmets where they look like jack-in-the-boxes in practice.
Yes.
Because
you know, the Guardian helmet.
It happens in the games, but until very recently, guys, football practices were as physical on the as any games were, and now they're reducing the amount of actual hitting in practice, which in turn is reducing the amount of blows to the head.
Put Andy on hold for a second, but you know, Artie, with regard to education, with regard to teaching players. How are they teaching players, you know, to tackle? You know, you mentioned at one time it was, you know, you put your head straight ahead and you hit these players right under the chin. How are we teaching to tackle today?
Well, you know, we've kind of gone back, Doc. It's kind of neat. We're going back to the old way of playing football, which is using your shoulders. Using, like, Troy Polamalu was a perfect example of this. He would come sliding in and just flip the guy up with his hands. That you're using a lot more like jitsugo or judo type moves where you use force, get the guy going one way, spin him around. A lot more arms involved. Arms and shoulders and, you know, kind of a sideward move. You're not seeing anybody leading with the actual cranium or the crown of the helmet. The referees are really into this. I mean, it's at the point now where if you watch quarterbacks dropping back, they're not allowed to go below the knees because they're afraid about the real structural knee and ankle injuries. And look at what Patrick Mahomes went through just 3 weeks ago when he hurt his left leg. You know, you're starting to see targets. You can't target above the shoulder or around the neck. So you've got a lot less space now. So they've actually taught football players to not use the helmet as a weapon. And that's the key. And this is being done from the Pop Warner level all the way through, you know, the guys that are going to be playing tomorrow afternoon for the World Championship of Football. So, but it takes a little bit of time for these things to happen. When you've had a 40-year period where you were taught to do something one way, the kids grow up watching it on TV. And, you know, when you watch a game and you remember Jack Tatum when he hit Daryl Stingley, you remember some of the great safeties, you know, over the years, yes. Ronnie Lott, my teammate at USC. These people piled through guys. It is a completely different game now because people are a lot more aware of the trauma that involves. These are full-on collisions. These are like being in four or five car accidents in a day, okay? It's nothing to really not take very seriously. And, you know, I kind of, on one side, I wish the NFL could have done more. But they really have stepped out in a lot of ways to protect their players. And, you know, I just hope that they continue down the line and we get the research necessary. There's some new things coming down the pipeline for motorcycle technology, helmets that are being made. You know, of the 129 concussions this year, and you know, you can look at the quarterback of the Steelers, Kenny Pickett. He changed his helmet in game 12. And one of the reasons he changed his helmet, he went to this new helmet that helps disperse the blow a little bit better. Once you go into concussion protocol, there's a new helmet that you must use in the NFL. Now, they haven't publicized this, but if you look very closely, it almost makes the player look a little bit like an alien because it has a different slant to it. And actually, if you get hit in the head, it kind of slides off the side a little bit. It doesn't give you the square, you know, circumference you need to actually hone in on it. But they're doing great things. It's just taken a long time. 94
to do it.
To 23, you guys. That's 3 decades we've been working on this.
Yes.
And it's still a prevalent problem.
Well, you know, I think part of their concern here, of course, is player safety, but it's the next generation of player safety, Artie. You know,
and how about just the game itself, you guys? You got moms and dads who are looking at it. And they're saying, you know, my favorite football player was Dave Duerson or, you know, like Mark Mancini, our producer. Mike Webster was one of his favorite football players.
Yes.
And these guys, you know, when they retire and they go through all these problems, people say, oh, well, you know, hey, let me tell you, the problems that arise from dementia, from CTE, from all of it, okay, you know, you lose focus. You can't pay attention. You know, you're dealing with the human brain. I mean, the most complex thing I can think of, and I'm not a medical
right.
doctor, but, I mean, the way the neurons fire, all these things, I mean, it's really amazing what we're putting ourselves through. And the future of the game, Doctor,
yes.
is right in our hands. We have to get to the bottom of this. We have to protect the players. And the NFL
right.
has done a lot of things, guys. They've moved the kickoff up so they get more balls going into the end zone, less kickoff return concussions. Like Andy said, these guys are going 21 miles an hour. You know, the amount of force, one guy coming one way, the other coming the other, that's incredible.
Tremendous.
So, yeah, it's something that, you know,
yep.
we're working on slowly but surely.
And Dr. Andy, you know, back to your point about these concussions and the force they're hitting, will helmets help protect that? Will they decrease the amount of that blow? Will they save the brain, if you will, or the neck, you know, from being injured as dramatically?
Yep, already touched on that a little bit. So believe it or not, with the force that I mentioned, that 1,600 pounds of force, the human body can actually handle about twice that amount as long
okay.
as the forces are distributed and more distributed more across the body. So he had mentioned a little bit about the helmets have a little bit different shape to them. You know, shoulder pad plastic hasn't changed much in 25 years, but it's, you know, molded into designs with more right angles to help deflect those impacts. So is
All
there
right.
ever going to be a helmet that's 100% safe? Absolutely not. There's no way. You can't convince me. Just simply because of the way the mechanics of it work. But there are improvements that are happening, as already just said. It took decades to get to this point. So
and
the more you can
so
take the helmet away from, you know, being the weapon of instrument, or the, you know, the weapon that it is, you can now
yes.
push that force across the shoulder pads and limit that zone, the widest possible distribution zone for the force. Absolutely. It's going to make a difference.
And do you think by changing the design, the equipment, there will be added longevity for these professional players in the NFL? Is that a
yep,
goal
yeah,
here
I,
as well?
Yeah, I think that's a good point, as well as, you know, helping to educate. Listen, we've got to take different stance on how we're allowed to hit these players. Yeah, from a spectator kind of view, it sucks because everybody likes to see the big hit. But if you want to, as you said, if you want some longevity, you got to make some changes.
Got it. And, you know, I want to go back to Dr. Gibson. You know, a very sad situation here is concussion and suicide. You know, it's prevalent. It happens. And indeed, Andy, what's the cause and effect here? You know, is a traumatic brain injury something that continues to degenerate and people get into depression, et cetera? Have you seen anything like that in your practice with these traumatic brain injuries?
I have, absolutely. So when the brain is injured, even one time, there's going to be a deposition of what's known as a tau protein, you know, TAU, and their primary job is to help stabilize. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Is that me?
Yeah.
Their
no,
primary job
ahead,
is to help their job is to help stabilize the neurological system. So when those tau proteins are damaged or defective, that's when you start to see CTE, another neurological sequela like Alzheimer's. They can result in Parkinson's or any other of the neurodegenerative conditions. But CTE
yeah.
in and of itself, you know, the repeated head blows, there's two primary forms of CTE. In the first form, you know, usually occurs in the 20s and in the 30s. That's the mental health, the behavioral issues, depression, anxiety, the impulsivity, the aggression. That's when you're most likely to see those suicidal ideations because
wow.
people realize I'm not the same person.
And
yeah,
if they
were
the prime
of
your life then.
Absolutely.
Right.
And then the second form usually occurs around age 60 or so. That's the memory, the cognitive loss, the trouble thinking. But most people are having the major difficulties in the earlier stages. Where I see it, obviously I see the initial impacts, but because of the related neck injury, you can have post-concussion symptoms for decades that can be alleviated once you get rid of that neck injury or start to address the neck injury that was never addressed with in the first place.
Well, you know, Andy, there's a player right now who we all watch on television, you know, whether it was on Fox, Troy Aikman, you know, now he's on ESPN doing a great job, you know, as a color analyst. But he remembers the 1993 NFC Championship game where he took a knee to the head. And they say that to this day, he cannot remember anything from that game. All right?
Wow.
And when he got home that night, he didn't recognize his brother or his mom. Okay?
Wow.
He was like in a fog for, as he said, almost 3 to 4 weeks. He remembers playing the Super Bowl, but he did it out of, like, muscle memory. He actually
won
a Super Bowl, you know, cognitively, you know, in trouble.
Yeah.
And now he goes back and he says to this day, when he does his research to do the games, which is, you know, these guys have to know about 90 players, and he does his boards to prepare for the broadcast. You know, he has to have notes right in front of him, because he'll find himself thinking about something and he'll forget his train of thought. And he goes back to that original concussion, and he said it took 5 years off his career, and that's when he decided that he was going to do whatever he could with the, you know, the great amount of money. I mean, the guy makes $20 million a year as a broadcaster in the NFL, much like Tony Romo. But these guys are starting to give back because they want to know in their own lives and for all their teammates, they want to know what they can do to actually expand the horizons to get to the point where maybe we can turn this thing around. I'm not sure it can happen physiologically. You know, they deal with soldiers that come back with post-traumatic stress, you know, from concussive blows. So, I mean, it's something that is a wide-open territory. They're making progress. But, I mean, it's like slogging through, you know, a swamp. It isn't as easy as you think. And each day you make small little steps, but they're getting better and better at it. And in the meantime, you know, all we can do is understand that there is a relationship between these men who are getting faster, stronger, and better, running full speed and colliding with each other.
Very good take on that. You know, I think from the NFL standpoint, there's two areas of concern. You know, one is prevention, which I think is so important. You know, prevention, education. The other thing, though, is how do we help these NFL players that have suffered from these injuries? And I think there's still ongoing research to see what we can do to help. You know, Artie, it's not a matter of giving them some money to go ahead and, yeah, here you go, pay your rent. But what about the quality of your life and your ability to think and cognate? And so it's something, again, it's a big issue. And I wanted to make our listeners, you know, aware of that overall. But, Artie, can I ask you a personal question?
Sure.
You know, as far as your history, you know, have you suffered from your days in the NFL, the days of playing? You know, are you, you know, do you have things that you notice now that maybe you didn't have based on, you know, the traumatic injuries, no doubt, you had? Even a kicker can get kind of dinged every once in a while, too, can't he?
Well, you know, one of the things that I noticed, and Dr. Greg, this is, you know, something it might be have to do with age as well, but I played in a street football game when I was, like, 31 years old up in Lake Tahoe, and there were, like, you know, 5-on-5, and I was running back covering a guy. And now, in the middle of the street, this is not the smartest thing in the world.
All right.
And I reached up for the ball, fell backwards, and I hit my head on the actual asphalt.
Street.
Okay?
Yes.
For 4 days, I felt like my brain was over here and my head was over there. And I noticed over the years, you know, one of the things that I do is I take a lot of Prevagen. I take Focus Factor. I take, you know, oodles of things that are supposed to help
supplement,
you know, the brain, the nootropics, all the things, you know, and this is expensive stuff, all right?
Oh,
but
yeah.
I have
but
noticed,
is it helping you? I mean, you're very vital.
Yes,
you're
out
of the world, my God. And, you know, Dr. Gibson, do you have any advice for him?
Well, my first question is, has he ever been evaluated at the base of the neck or the, you know, top of the spine there? You know, those injuries can stay latent and hidden for decades, producing a sequela of symptoms that can just be absolutely mind-numbing. People would never, ever associate it. And the problem is most of the pain fibers
really
that pass through the neck, you don't feel it.
I went through a situation with my thyroid. I was hyperthyroid. And one of the things that I noticed about being hyperthyroid was it actually got the hypothalamus moving so quickly that my memory was incredible, okay? But the doctors were very concerned about, you know, my resting heart rate being over 100. I got so much stuff done, it was amazing. And I could recall things intricately that and they basically said that I was you know, really in focus. But if I didn't slow down, I'd have a chance, you know, possibly to stroke out or something of that nature.
Ooh.
So I took the radioactive isotope, slowed my body down, and I've noticed that since I've slowed down, I don't have that that fast impulse, be able to think about something, retrieve it out of the files, go do it. I have to be more planning. I have to write things down. Because I'll find myself, you know, like doing my radio shows or
sure.
or TV shows, I'll find myself in the middle of something, and I'll have to find a little synoptic gap there, you know. And
yep. And
so, there's ways you can get through it, but it does take a little patience with yourself.
And you've got to take care of yourself. I'd like our listeners to know that, Artie, that even celebrities, you know, have problems. And they still need to track them down and take care of themselves.
Can I tell you that one of the things that people don't realize is an aerobic workout, even for 20 minutes, does just as much for the brain as it does for your body. And
you keep the oxygen flowing.
It's all part of this. You know, you have to eat properly. Nutrition is important. You know, taking care of yourself, laughing and giggling and living life. I mean, you know, this is not – they call it a present because it is a present, okay? It's not something to be taken for granted. And that's why, you know, I look at people and, you know, and every moment that I get to spend on this earth is special, and I want to get better every day. I try to tell that to the people who listen.
Yes.
And you need to come to grips with the reality of, hey, if there is a problem, let's deal with it head on. Let's figure out how we can, you know, achieve success and get better. And that's all we can do as human beings. You know, show a little sympathy and compassion.
Oh, yeah, Artie, I agree with that thinking. And, you know, I tell my listeners the same thing. You know, let's take care of this body. Let's make sure that, you know, we don't go ahead and feed it things that it shouldn't have. Let's get off the alcohol, the drugs, the smoking. Let's exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make sure we go to our healthcare professionals when we have a problem. And to see if we can get remedies. You know, let's make tomorrow a better day. Topic of a prior book, which was fantastic, is Younger Next Year. Let's try to be younger next year with our body. Keep it healthy. But, you know, I'd like to go to L.A. Mark Mancini is just chomping at the bit. Mark Mancini, go ahead.
Yeah, we're loaded up on a great show. I mean, it's tearing up. Mike from Bellingham, Washington, has three questions, and they all pertain to each one of you guys. The first one, he says, I'm wearing a New York Sack Exchange T-shirt supporting Mark Gastineau. Question to you, Artie, is he suffered a lot, too. Why are we taking care of these players? We can give $150,000 to a winning team in the Super Bowl, $80,000 to a loser, but we can't take care of the players that made the game what it once was.
Well, you know,
wow.
One of the guys that played with him, Joe Klecko, was just put in the Hall of Fame Thursday night. And it's a great, great move. And, you know, he almost was paralyzed. You're going to start seeing as we go along here with the massive move in football. You have franchises that, like Jerry Jones bought back in the 90s for $180 million that are worth $8 billion now, Mark. So you're going to start to see owners like that who are going to make a move because they need to protect the shield. They need to protect the game. All right, and by protecting the players, you protect the game. And, you know, we can't go back and change what's happened. We can work on it. We can do the things we can to make their lives better. But we can prevent future problems by using technology, by looking at how medicine and you know, recovery. You know, did anybody ever think that you'd have guys in the stands that are going to be watching a game and send these players into the blue tent, and they're going to have seven different people who are going to actually check them? In the old days, you know what they'd do? They'd just hide your helmet. You'd be walking around, what inning is it in a football game? And, you know, and where'd my helmet go? And that was their way of telling you that, you know, you're really not prepared to go back in.
You're not
game.
Going back in.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, let me continue on Mike's question. He throws one over to Andy saying, is there a difference between acupuncture and chiropractic?
There's a humongous difference, absolutely. So the primary difference is the tools used. Obviously, acupuncture can use either electrical stimulation or, you know, little needles, whereas the primary tool for the chiropractor, we're going to use your hands. But the other major difference is the application of force, essentially. You know, most chiropractors are going to use a manual manipulation, which is going to affect the structures of the body, the joints, the spine, and that will, so to speak, it frees up the information traveling between the brain and the spinal cord. And the acupuncturist is largely looking for areas of interference within the nerve system, almost like a trigger point, but it's kind of a trigger point for the nerves. They talk about the flow of information being blocked, and so we want to find those blockage points in acupuncture and kind of free that up.
You know, what's really interesting, Andy, is I've had both of the processes that you're talking about done. My brother-in-law is a chiropractor here in York, Pennsylvania. Wonderful, wonderful man, does great things for a lot of people. I believe in both of those arts or sciences or medical practices. The Chinese, and you hit it right on the head. The part of acupuncture and acupressure that people don't realize is you have occlusions, you have blockages of the energy flow in your body. And the Chinese were pretty brilliant about this almost 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 years ago. They started to realize that once you get a blockage somewhere, you know, this is what causes the pain, which causes, you know, the might be rheumatoid arthritis, whatever. You want everything flowing. You want the chi and the, you know, everything flowing through your body as best as possible. And they're both really excellent ways to combat stress in modern day societal problems.
Yep. The way I describe it to my – go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to mention, from an NFL standpoint, do they provide these kind of services or professionals to their hurt players? Do they make this type of information available to them? You know, if you have players that never heard about these things, would that be something advantageous if the NFL doesn't do it? Should they start to make people like Dr. Gibson available to their team?
Well, you know, the quest for knowledge, I think, is paramount to every individual on the planet. And, you know, I think the more you are in touch with, you know, what's going on in your body, both physically and mentally, and, you know, yes, the trainers do these things. The trainers in the National Football League are brilliant. You saw, you know, what happened with the Damar Hamlin situation, how
yes.
quickly the, you know, the first responders got out there. I mean, it's so much
tremendous.
Better than it used to be. In the old days, the trainer would come out and he'd say, rub some dirt on it, you'll be fine. You know? I mean, it was a completely different world. Now they realize the importance of the technologies that they have, and they really do. I think they pretty much, you know, cover everything possible, and if they don't, they should.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. You know, with education prevention, I still had another topic I wanted to touch on with regard to what the NFL does pre-game, you know, about their pre-game medical preparation. Again, just a few minutes down the road here, we'll finish with Mr. Mancini. Go ahead, Mark.
Yep. We're getting loaded. And let me get the final question of that three-parter over to you. Doc, he basically says sore throat. Sometimes he feels his glands closing. Is there a remedy to take care of that? Because sometimes at night he feels it, a cold coming on or stuff like that. Do you have any prevention for something like that?
Well, you know, Mark, I think that's a topic for another day. But With regard to sore throat, especially at night, it may not be infectious. It may be coming from his stomach. You know, I think we've talked about the word GERD, gastroesophageal reflux. Could be that acid comes out, burns his esophagus, burns the glands in the mouth. Night is worse for it overall. But, you know, down the road here, and I believe maybe even next week, we're going to talk about stomach acid, stomach ulcers, and GERD. So let's save that question for next Saturday. So go ahead.
Yeah, let me throw one more and get it back to you guys. Carney from Lake Havasu, regular listener. We got Gail from Fort Myers, but getting on Carney's, he says, guys, I think the emphasis on the Super Bowl should be not what color skin we all are, but what everybody is doing to be on the football field. I think the emphasis this week has been talked about two starting black quarterbacks should be like that. We all bleed the same. Wow, another great question.
Artie, go ahead and take it.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's 100%, you guys. I remember many, many years ago being at Rams camp when I was trying out for the Rams, and there was a quarterback named Walton. He was a black quarterback, and at the time, only Shaq Harris was the only black quarterback in the NFL. And we've come a long way since then, you guys. My coach, John McKay at USC, brought a guy from right here in Harrisburg, Jimmy Jones, into the NFL. You know, he was one of the first quarterbacks. He went down and played against Alabama. And, you know, Bear Bryant was good friends with John McKay. They came off the field afterward. Sam Bam Cunningham, the great running back, he said, wow. And, you know, that changed the course of college football. And now in the NFL, you know, we've come to the point where finally, you know, and Doug Williams won a Super Bowl back, you know, with the Redskins against the Broncos in 87. But to see two great athletes, two great young men, and I think she's right. It has nothing to do with color anymore.
Right.
It has to do with opportunity. You give these young kids who love, I mean, look at Patrick Mahomes when he accepted the MVP the other night, you guys. He showed so much class, talking about his family, his brothers, his sister, everybody that made the journey to where he is today special. Nobody makes this cruise by themselves. You have to have that supporting group around you. And that's something that I think has changed for the better. And, you know, I still believe in this society, this democracy that we have. And I think it's a wonderful thing that, you know, we're at the point where we are now. We need to understand that we are all just human beings, whether we're, you know, whatever walk of life we come from, whatever ethnic background. And we need to embrace that. We don't need to run from it. We need to embrace our differences in cultures.
And at the end of the day, Artie, we're all the same. You know that? There are no differences, to be
valuable
honest.
Valuable human beings, Doc.
We're valuable human beings. And, you know, when you bring race into it, et cetera, boy, that really colors the whole situation here and makes it dirty. Let's not do that. You know, these quarterbacks have worked their lives to be where they are. They put themselves out there. It's a matter of ability, smarts. They didn't fall off the truck and get there to go ahead and be a quarterback. And, you know, you talk about Patrick Mahomes. He was an all-star baseball player. He played, you know, in the major leagues and then came into the football world.
His dad was a great right-handed pitcher. You have to realize
right. The
kid was growing up as a young man in clubhouses with great people like Don Mattingly and Dave Winfield, and he saw how these people approached their lives and the professionality that they derived. And let me tell you something. Learned behavior is never something to be taken advantage of. I mean, the opportunity that he had to be around great athletes in clubhouses made him even more,
well,
you know,
more
special.
Awareness, more reality of what was going
Correct.
On in that sport and how to act in that, skills were necessary in that sport to make
And that's why we need more boys and girls clubs and more people working with inner city youth to let them chase their dreams, Doc. This is all about dreams. People don't realize this, but when a little kid sees somebody out there playing a game and says, wow, I want to be like him, hey, that just got him so excited about maybe a future. He may never reach it, but for that moment, he can visualize, you know, what it would be like to be, you know,
Artie,
Patrick Mahomes,
you know,
or Jalen Hurts. This is awesome stuff.
Well, you know, as far as just chasing dreams, having a dream, seeing these players play, that would be great for our society. We can boil it down to an individual, but to making our society great, that does that. You know, I want to be a great doctor. I want to be a great ball player. I want to go ahead and be an astronaut. We want our youth to have those
dreams.
You're
chasing excellence. That's what, you know, Al Davis, when I used to work for the Raiders, people loved him. They hated him. You know, he was kind of, this is a true story, but he was half Jewish and half Sicilian. So he was conflicted the whole way.
Yeah.
but he always talked about, you know, excellence, what it is that makes greats great. Well, I've kind of studied that in my lifetime. And what it comes down to is a persistence, a little bit of an arrogance, a lot of humility, but a want to. In other words, there's days you wake up and you go, wow, I don't got it today. You got to drop that, get going, make it happen. And, you know, it's easier said than done, we all know. But you know, bit of hope, a little bit of belief goes a long way. And that's something that I think we're missing in our educational system in this country, this great country we live in. I mean, we have to get back to every young child is important. They are the future of our country. And
I agree.
We get caught up in day-to-day stuff, and we never have to forget the kids. The kids are the most important thing, you guys.
That's our future. But, Artie, you know, the other thing with what you're saying, and, you know, we're kind of off topic, but it's called professionalism. We need our professionals to act like professionals. You know, I don't feel
and leadership
that I'm going
as well,
in there today. Right. And, you know, as far as our young people, we are the images they look at every day. You know, we're the ones that set the tone. And indeed, you know, I've had a show. We talked about our society somewhat degenerating because our families, our cell units need to be strong. You know, we need good family units to help our children.
That's so important.
To nourish them.
I mean,
I
way
agree.
Overlooked in our society. And, you know, when the school system starts, you know, telling the parents that you have no control over your kids, what? What are we talking about?
That's
I mean,
right.
My father wanted to know what I learned every day we sat down at the dinner table. You know, what did you learn today? What was meaningful about your day? You
but
know,
hey, Artie, you know what?
I better be ready to answer
another,
that.
Let's have another show. I can tell you this. If I'd have given my dad garbage at the dinner table, I wouldn't be around very long. My dad was a Marine. Hey, I want to talk about one more thing to finish up here, and that's this pre-game medical team meeting where an hour before kickoff, all medical staff meet together in the referee's locker room. And do you know about that? Have you seen that happen?
You know, that actually has been instituted now since 2013, and nobody knew about it for a lot of times. But what they do is they go through a what-if scenario. Okay, are we ready? Do we have, you know, if a guy has a heart attack, if a guy has a back injury,
yep.
All these different scenarios, they actually, you know, much like football coaches being prepared for anything that could happen, they actually prepare themselves, and the referees are a part of this as well. You also have, you know, like I talked about earlier, you know, to get out of a concussion protocol now, there's five different things that have to happen, right?
Yep.
And there's no timing on this. You have to have symptom-limited activity, okay? You have to have aerobic exercise. You know, Tua Lavoa went through it with the Miami Dolphins this year. Number three, football-specific exercise. Club-based non-contact training. In other words, are you able to function at a high level? And then finally, you're cleared for practice or activity. Now, this could take from 5 days to 3 weeks.
Cool.
It depends on each individual, and all these different medical doctors are part of this, okay? And, you know, I think that's a real step in the right direction.
Beautiful. And, you know, Doctor, I'd like to bring Dr. Gibson back on. You know, Dr. Gibson, as far as following these concussed people, how long does it take to get better? You know, when do you see the people getting back to the 100% level? What do you see?
Boy, that's a good question. I see a lot of athletes in the area, and I can tell you that the longer that it's been unaddressed, the longer it takes to heal. That's for sure. Textbooks, when I was a student, they used to say 6 weeks, you'll be good to go. Nowadays, a pretty severe injury could take 6 months, and then you start to add on repeat blows to the head.
Yeah,
it's going to push that timeline out even further. But it's important, like I already said, the therapies that they start right away makes all the difference in the world. The sooner you can get to the healing, the faster the body can process that force.
One of the things I always wondered about you guys is when you actually do have a concussion, there is some brain swelling, correct?
Correct.
And that brain swelling, that leads to some really, really sad and scary things. And I've always wondered, there was a process they used where they would actually freeze the head a little bit. Have you heard about that at all?
I have heard about that. Yeah. Yep. That was the cryotherapy is, it's been around for a while. As far as the swelling goes, the swelling can actually be mitigated as soon as one of the big factors, of course, is what I see, is when the neck is addressed, because when you have a lanoaxial rotary misalignment, that top two bones are misaligned, it will congest the brain and it will prevent it from draining naturally. And so that'll interrupt your sleep habits. Absolutely. So it'll interrupt your sleep habits. You cannot physically get into a stage 4 sleep when you have that extra brain pressure. And when that happens, then the brain can't clean itself, because the brain cleans itself through an osmotic pressure gradient. So if you can't clean it, then you get more deposition of junk up there, leads to more brain fog, more or less sleep, and then the whole thing just sequela and spirals.
So the areas that need to be involved are the brain, but also the neck. They both
Greg, every single concussion has a neck injury without exception.
Wow, that's so important. So important. Super. I think we're getting to the end of our time here. Mr. Mark Mancini, do you have a final question for me?
Yeah, I got one. Albert from Poway says, hey, Artie, what was the toughest place to kick, whether the field was wet, snow, or both of the above?
Well, Candlestick Park in the old days, I'll tell you, those winds would matriculate through there. You wouldn't know. They'd be going downwind on one hash mark and into your face on the other hash mark. So I would say either there or the old Giants Stadium in the Meadowlands, when they'd open the doors. If you were kicking in a – I got to kick in 3 preseason games in the old Meadowlands, and I remember when their kicker would come out, they'd close the doors and there'd be no wind, and then when we came out on the field, they'd open the doors, and here comes the wind blowing all the way into
let me get one more in, and then I'll give it back over to you. We'll wrap it up here shortly. Vince from New Rochelle, New York, chiming in, another regular, says, guys, why is it where baseball pitchers have problems with their rotator cuffs, they got to do the Tommy John surgery, but we don't hear a lot of it with the NFL quarterbacks? Any thought to that? That's a great question.
It is.
Go ahead, Artie or Dr. Gibson.
That is a good question. I'm gonna absolutely tell you, I have no idea. Never even considered it.
Wow.
Well,
and Artie,
I will say this, you guys. If you watch a pitcher when he plants that left leg, and you take a close look at that elbow, and you see the amount of force when you're throwing the ball 90 plus miles an hour. I mean, I used to deal with, when I worked for Mizuno Sporting Goods, I dealt with Nolan Ryan, who was a phenomenon in terms of his longevity. Nobody had stronger legs than Nolan Ryan. He would get on the life cycle and go level 8, level 9 for an hour and 30 minutes. Okay?
Oh, my God.
His legs were so powerful, he never had arm problems. And that's part of it. I think the great quarterbacks, if you watch them, they learn how to throw by turning their shoulders, and it takes a little more pressure off from what a pitcher does. Plus, they're not throwing downhill like a major league pitcher. So you're not putting that ultimate stress on the actual ulnar nerve, which is, where the ligament tears, and then you got to go see Dr. Job and get it done.
Oh, yeah.
But that's a great question. I've never even thought about that in that sense. You don't hear of quarterbacks.
What about
quarterback
legs? Is it important, Arnie, that they have strong legs as well?
Oh, heck yes. That's why at the end of Joe Namath's career, after all the knee surgeries, he had to actually backpedal to get back in the pocket. He couldn't turn and do the traditional drop back. He could run backwards just fine. He couldn't run forwards. But, I mean, he learned how to actually turn his shoulders and hips to throw passes, okay, because he didn't have his legs. If you put pressure on Tom Brady, you know where Tom Brady doesn't like pressure? Up the middle.
Yeah.
Because when you step and throw, you know, you don't want to step on a foot. You don't want to that's the only time you'll see Tom Brady really get a little cheesy out there. He doesn't like anybody in his – who does like anybody in their face?
Sure.
But,
nope, I agree.
Yes, they do have to use their legs.
Wonderful. Hey, Artie, two more questions. Dr. Alan Seals, who's the CMO now for the NFL, what do you know about him? Anything?
You know, I do know that everybody that I've talked to regarding Dr. Seals speaks very highly of him. I think he's the right man at the right time. I'm hoping the NFL gives him more resources to work with, because I really do believe he's got an idea and he's got a plan that'll make this better. His blue tent, his new concussion protocol situation, the fact that, you know, people are actually looking out and seeing, you know, if a guy is like walking around going to the wrong huddle, things of that nature.
Yep.
That's all positive. And
okay.
I think he's done a great job. And, you know, I just hope they continue to keep the players in mind and err on the side of caution, because, you know, one of the things that kind of bothered me about the NFC Championship to both of you was, you know, they suit up 54 guys get paid, and they suit up 45 guys. People are paying huge money to go to an NFC Championship game. Do you want to see a quarterback with a torn ulnar nerve out there playing UCL when he can't even throw the ball?
No.
That's not right.
No,
it's not
right.
There should be a third emergency quarterback. Then should something happen, he goes in, he gets his pads on, he comes out, and he plays. It's ridiculous. I mean, I don't get it. You're paying nine guys to not play, and you're putting on a show for the people. I mean, this is, you know, the biggest game in the
–
if you're a
49er
fan, you're a little bit bummed that you didn't get a chance to have a guy that could at least throw the football.
Yep, I agree.
Wow.
We love that. We love our football. We love our football players. Go ahead, Mark Mancini.
Yeah, we're going to wrap it up, and Joey will throw the final thing out there. He's from Bucks County, PA. He says, guys, I'd like to go see my Eagles in the Super Bowl. Can I borrow one of those Chinese balloons? But please don't shoot it down till after the game.
How current that one is.
Does the stadium have a hole in the roof?
Hey, Artie, give us a prediction for the Super Bowl.
I'm going against everybody. Everybody's telling me about how great the Eagles are. I don't think they've played anybody since they played Dallas. I like Kansas City because of Patrick Mahomes and the fact he's already played in two Super Bowls. The moment's not going to be too big for him. 31-28 KC in an upset.
Good. And Dr. Gibson, you want to throw a prediction out there?
I've got to go with KC also today.
Wonderful. And how about you, Mark Mancini?
Well, you know, you and I are from the same city, so it's kind of hard to go on the other opposite end of the state, but
yep.
We got to become allies, and we got to support our brethren all the way to the east of us. So I got Philly 35-17.
Go Eagles.
I feel Philly, too. Yes. Hey, gentlemen, thank you all. Artie, as well as Dr. Gibson, I'd love to have you on another show.
What's your prediction, Doc? Come on.
You know what? It's Philly. I really think Philly is stronger defensively.
Yeah,
they do have one heck, and they're a big ball club, too. When you see them in person, you go, wow.
Wow.
Hey, this has been awesome. I hope people learn some stuff out there. I really appreciate you having me on, and I want to thank you guys.
Would you come on again?
Yeah, Artie, let everybody know how they can get a hold of you if they want to, because I know you're a busy boy there in Arizona.
Yeah, it's your source for sports, SORCE, at gmail.com, your source for sports, or you can go on Facebook, ArtieSource, ArtieSource. We always have the cutting-edge stuff, the stories that really mean a lot. And thanks for the opportunity, Mark and Doc.
Thank you.
And Andy, how can people get a hold of you, my friend? Because what you're doing is just as important.
People can best get a hold of me at my website, GibsonUCC.com.
And Doc, as I give it over to you, let everybody know if they're in the greater Pittsburgh area. I know you'll be there soon, unless you're going to sunbathe down there in Clearwater, Florida, and enjoy the 77-degree temperature.
Well, we may enjoy it for a couple more days, but they can get a hold of me, GJRMD308@outlook.com. You know, summarizing our show today, I think the biggest point is let's take care of our youth, our athletes, let's educate, let's apply good principles, not just in football, to our everyday lives. And I thank you all very much. Look forward to you after the Super Bowl. And we'll have a great show next Saturday as well.
Yep, for Doc out there in Clearwater, Artie in Phoenix, and Andy in Pennsylvania, yours truly signing off in Los Angeles. We'll see you next week. Catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. Have a blessed weekend, guys, and go Eagles.
Thank you. Bye.